This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 14th of September, 2018. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for Roy Faithful. Our editors this week are Jean Gardner, Sonia Phillips, Sheila Shepherd and Jane Pickard. And I'm joined by our three readers for this week, Lynn Parker.
Hello.
Nick Cairns.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
Well, first, our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That is 01962 711 998. When you finish listening to the recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope, also putting your address label inside the envelope, and pop it in the post. No stamp required. Thank you. Just to remind you, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using your memory stick in the box provided, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle on our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You can either listen to it off the website or download the recording to listen to it later. You can even plug your memory stick into the USB port on your computer. Now, the main headlines for this week are Hollingbury set to lose seat in shake-up, Saints legend sees improved pitches, and City welcomes new names in Silverhill Boost. So, Lynn, I have this this vision on reading the headline Hollingbury set to lose seat in shake-up of George Hollingbury taking part in a new dance craze called a shake-up and losing the seat of his pants. But then perhaps I'm mistaken. Perhaps you could enlighten us.
So we have Hollingbury set to lose seat in shake-up. A proposed shake-up of parliamentary boundaries could see at least one Hampshire constituency disappear. Conservative MP George Hollingbury's Meon Valley constituency would vanish, carved up between the neighbouring seats of Winchester and East Hampshire, under proposals announced by the Boundary Commission yesterday to reduce the number of MPs by 50 to 600. A new Test Valley constituency would also be created to replace Romsey and Southampton North, currently represented by Immigration Minister Caroline Noakes. The villages of Nursling, Rownhams and Chilworth would remain part of the Test Valley seat, despite previous proposals to include them in New Forest East. The villages of Mottisfont, Orbridge and East and West Titherley would, however, move into the New Forest seat. The changes come after the government promised the consultations of part of its election manifesto. Mr. Hollingbury said he was disappointed but would continue to serve his constituents as best he could. He said, "I am, of course, disappointed the Meon Valley constituency will cease to exist if these proposals go through, but I have always supported a reduction in the number of MPs. Further, these important and fair changes to constituency boundaries mean everyone's votes will carry the same weight in future parliamentary elections, and fewer MPs also mean that there is a cost saving for the taxpayer, so I welcome them wholeheartedly." Secretary to the Commission, Sam Hartley, said, "The recommendations we have published mark the end of a thorough and consultative process to build a new map of constituencies. We've travelled the country, taking account of over 35,000 public comments and heard many impassioned views about how best to reflect local communities in our recommendations, while ensuring that constituencies are all much more equally represented. The only three Hampshire constituencies to remain completely unchanged would be Basingstoke, Eastleigh and Gosport.
Thank you, Lynn. Now, Nick, what's this about sports pitches?
Well, the title is Saints Legend Sees Improved Pitches. A Saints legend joined the Mayor of Winchester at the weekend to open the improved King George V playing fields. Former England player Mick Shannon, who was part of the 1976 FA Cup winning Saints team, was in Bar End on Sunday following significant investment from Winchester City Council. As well as Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson, Mick was joined by Winchester City Council's portfolio holder for health and wellbeing, Councillor Lisa Griffiths, and the Winchester City Flyers girls football team, where Mick's granddaughter, Evie Morrell, plays. New goalposts and pitch markings have transformed the fields, with the facilities now including improved access and 11 football pitches that have adult full-size markings overlaid with pitch marking for youth football. The new facilities were put to the test on Sunday when almost 1,000 players competed in the Flyers' annual girls' football tournament. And this article is accompanied by a number of pictures showing in particularly Mick Channon, Councillor Frank Pearson, the Mayor, Councillor Lucy Griffiths and Mick Channon's granddaughter as well, all at the King George V playing fields.
Thank you, Nick. Dane Silverhill, please.
Yes, this article's entitled Triple Boost for City Centre. Three new enterprises are set to bring a boost to Winchester City Council City Centre following the launch of a new gin workshop. The Blend Academy, a gin school hosting Create Your Own Gin sessions as well as classes, is set to open its doors on October the 1st and marks the next step in the City Centre's Silver Hill 2 revamp. Run by local distillers Winchester Distillery, the new workshop is taking over the upstairs floor of the former post office site in Middlebrook Street. The building has remained empty for a number of years. Meanwhile, upmarket frozen food firm Cook has taken over the Jaeger shop on the corner of St George's Street and Upper Brook Street. And, as previously reported, Nutshell Arts is taking over the antiques market, which has been vacant for more than a year. Also part of the Silver Hill area, the moves represent the first steps in the project, officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, to revamp this part of the city centre. Council leader Caroline Horrell, who is also chairman of the committee leading the Central Winchester Regeneration, said, "It's super to see local businesses take up space in the city centre and be part of a thriving business community. We are thrilled to have the Winchester Distillery take up residence on Middlebrook Street, where we've already welcomed a Pilates business. The premises have been empty and neglected for years, so we've totally refurbished the space, and with businesses like Winchester Distillery moving in, it's being brought back to life. This company has grown up locally and is a great example of innovation and growth in our district." Winchester Distillery owner Paul Bowler added, "We've been running gin-making experiences from our distillery in Alsford for a few years now, and they've been really successful. This new space in central Winchester means more people can easily reach us, and now we will have the space to host a range of fun educational events." As well as the new workshop, Winchester City Centre has also welcomed the arrival of new frozen foods store Cook, which has brought the former Jaeger shop in St George's Street back to life. The unit has been empty since the fashion chain went into administration last summer. As previously reported, the Silver Hill 2 scheme sets out the vision for the regeneration of part of the city centre. The 4.5 hectare area includes key sites such as the bus station, the Broadway, St Clement's Medical Centre, Friars Gate Car Park and the Antiques Market building. Following the arrival of Nutshell Arts at the Antiques Market, the building is set to be rebranded as The Nutshell and will be used as a place for rehearsals, workshops, exhibitions and small-scale productions, alongside resident companies like the Discarded Nut Theatre Company and Encore Youth Theatre. It comes after the council approved spending £25,000 to bring the vacant building back to life. Now The Nutshell is crowdfunding to bring the new venue to life. Harriet Morris, one of the directors, said, "This building is such a great space and will be a wonderful location for our work." And this article is illustrated with two photographs, one with Councillor Horrell with various people from The Nutshell in the revamped, beautiful open space at the top of the Antiques Market, and a photograph showing how the new Blend Academy is expected to look above the old post office.
Thank you, Jane. Sounds like a good place for all nuts to go. Right, we have a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices, then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, My Winchester, Joanna Lewis's column, Your Say, Belgarum, historical items, What's On, and then Lighting Up Times. So we go on with the death notices, please. Barfield, Derek John Barfield, 1st of September, aged 91.
Gardner, Daphne Betty Gardner, known as Nandy or Duffers, peacefully at home, 6th of September, aged 85.
Howells, Margaret Howells, known as Anne, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home.
Jones, Pamela Syson Jones, née Tibbetts, peacefully at home on the 3rd of September.
Knight, Sheila Mary Knight, known as Mary, peacefully at West Holm Nursing Home, 31st of August, aged 86.
Smith, Pearl Smith, peacefully in her sleep, 26th of August.
Spires, Margaret Ruth Spires, peacefully, 27th of August, aged 79.
Wakely, Muriel Alice Wakely, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home on the 30th of August, aged 94.
Thank you. Now we go on to Christian comment. It's written this week by the Reverend Philip Crinks. And Lynn is desperately looking for the piece of paper and she's found it.
Yes.
Thank you, Lynn.
Christian comment. What does good business look like? The collapse of online payday lender Wonga has refocused attention on responsible business practice. Wonga's business was lending money unsecured for short terms at very high interest rates. They said their service was aimed at people avoiding a few days of overdraft charges. But by 2012, they had hundreds of thousands of borrowers. Some loans were made irresponsibly to people who had little chance of paying back on time. In 2013, Archbishop Justin Welby was among those who spoke out against Wonga's business model. He identified credit unions and not-for-profit social lenders as better alternatives. Soon the government backed him. The interest rate for loans was capped. By 2015, the bubble in payday lending was pricked. Wonga hit trouble. Previous borrowers also claimed compensation. Last week, the lender went into administration. For many people, including many business people, Wonga's short life illustrated business at its worst. It seemed to be profiting from the misfortunes of the poorest. It was reinvesting profits in marketing its products online and on television, drawing more people into harmful borrowing. What then does good business look like? We know it when we see it. Financial sustainability with fair returns to investors. Products and services which nurture us, not harm us. Caring for employees. Fair trading with suppliers. Contributing to the community. Christianity speaks of our common good. We need freedom to take decisions and learn from their consequences. we are also committed to each other's flourishing. We need to invest in relationships. We also need economic structures which can change and adapt. One charity has developed a blueprint for better business, and this has been adopted by leading companies, both large and small. There are many good-for-profit businesses which make the world a better place. They not only supply the goods we need to survive and thrive, they also provide a chance for people's God-given gifts and talents to be used and made fruitful. Other forms of enterprise are growing too, which are run not for profit, but mainly for a social purpose. Locally, we have our much-valued charity shops. We have the Hampshire Community Bank and Solent Credit Union. We have the Bike Hub and soon the Handlebar Cafe on Winchester's Garnier Road. We have the School for Social Entrepreneurs and the new Inspiring Enterprise Programme, Chronicle, September the 6th, helping budding social entrepreneurs develop their ideas. If you are the praying type, please pray for those who lead and work in your community's commercial and social businesses. Pray that they will know God's presence with them in their work and will respond to his will to use their gifts in the service of others. Pray that God will give to all who work a pride in what they do and a just return for their efforts. Pray also for those who are seeking fulfilling work, that they may find it. And this was written by the Reverend Philip Prinks, priest in charge of St Faith's Winchester at St Cross Hospital.
Thank you, Lynn. Now we go on to letters to the editor. For a change, there seems to be no one theme which is exercising the minds of Hampshire Chronicle letter writers this week. So I have to apologise to everybody. There are no letters about Brexit this week. I'm so sorry. There we are. Anyway, starting with Nick, please.
Right, this first one is about motorbike riding on the A272. Sir... Oh, sorry, it's entitled Noise Annoys. Sir, well done to Caroline Banks for drawing attention to the problems caused by motorbikes on the A272. Chronicle Letters, August the 30th. Living as we do, on the same road but in a different village, I don't think I know anyone who doesn't feel the same anger and frustration about how motorbikes are ruining country life. The problem has got much worse in the 15 years we have lived in what is otherwise an idyllic part of Hampshire. I do not for 1 minute wish to stop the motorbike community from having their fun. But there has to be recognition that antisocial behaviour, which affects the countless thousands of people that live within 1 mile or more of roads such as the A272, is not acceptable. This letter is not aimed, I'm sure, at the vast majority of sensible bikers, but at the few selfish ones who cause so much irritation. The speed with which the bikes are ridden is undoubtedly a big part of the problem, and Caroline Banks' suggestion to introduce speed cameras can only help to keep speeds within the legal limits. But the problem is not just speed, it is also noise. Why are bikes that are effectively race-tuned, often with exhausts that have been modified to increase the sound of their engines, rather than the reverse, allowed to operate at all on our roads? Their place is on racetracks, surely. Cars with similar noisy engines would not pass their MOT, so why are bikes not the same? When such bikes are then driven at enormously high speeds, seemingly without much risk of being stopped and prosecuted, their engines can be heard miles away, especially in the very early morning. Bikers need to obey the speed limits and ensure that their bikes meet current noise pollution restrictions. If they don't, the law should either protect those that suffer as a consequence, or the law must be changed to offer that protection. And that letter is from L. Franks of Petersfield Road, Bramdean.
Nick, Jane.
This letter's about mayoral events. Sir, during the mayoral year, it is usual for the mayor to support several charities. This year's mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, has chosen the Rowans Hospice, the Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, the Defence Medical Welfare Service. Oh, and that's it. Over the next few months, there are events which may appeal to you. On September the 26th, world-renowned Professor Martin Biddle will be in Abbey House at 10:30 in the morning to give us further insights into the archaeology of Winchester. And on October the 3rd, also at 10:30 in Abbey House, there is the opportunity to learn more of the wonderful work at the Rowans by Mr. Ian Young, Trustee. Tickets are £8 for each event and they can be obtained from the Tourist Information Centre, the Guildhall, Winchester. On October the 26th in the Guildhall, there will be a grand dinner and ball. Further details for this can be obtained from www.mayorofwinchesterscharities.co.uk, from the notice board outside Abbey House, or directly from me, Anne Pearson, that's AnnePearson1, at msn.com. We look forward to seeing you and receiving your support. And that's from Anne Pearson, the Mayoress of Winchester 2018-19, Abbey House, The Broadway, Winchester.
Thank you, Jane. Just to remind those who might have forgotten that that was written by our ex-mayor, Jane.
How can anybody forget?
Well, we did try.
Thank you.
Lynn.
This time we have a bus pass issue. Sir, in his letter on August the 30th, Mr. Selwood's comment about senior bus passes does need slight clarification. Although such passes are issued nationally, a standard English pass is not valid in Scotland or Wales, and presumably not in Northern Ireland either. Ms. Andrew's letter, Think Again, raises the issue of there being no longer direct trains from Winchester to Salisbury. Has there ever been? A look at the railway map will show that both cities have railways aligned towards London, which was the most important route in Victorian times. But there have never been proposals for a direct link between the aforesaid cities. At present, it is to Eastleigh and change into the Romsey Shuttle and then change again or go the other way, changing at Southampton. Incidentally, I overheard the same comment some years ago while on a bus. I wonder where the idea originated. And this is from L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
Thank you, Lynn. Nick?
A lonely city. Sir, I grew up in Winchester and have seen many changes. I'm nearing my 70s. I feel now as lonely as ever. I'm a carer for a relative. I write to you about several issues and hope you and your readers can help. Due to my age and circumstances, I have a small social circle. Is there any volunteering that a man my age can do, I ask? I would like help with my health, but mental health services in Winchester are limited to Priory Garden, of which I have mixed feelings about. Is there any other mental health support in Winchester? I wish this letter to help others and encourage debate. I have asked for this letter to be name and address supplied, as I don't wish to be identified. On the bright side, I am going down to River Park to see if there is any exercise classes I can join. Plus, join the council-run walking football team, as I hear they are a sociable and a great team to join. I noticed their poster in my local newsagents.
Thank you, Nick. What a rather poignant letter, but he does seem to be making some efforts to help himself, which is good news. Jane.
This letter is entitled Still an Eyesore. Sir, now the Chesil Lodge has opened, there have been several comments on it in the Chronicle. Joanna Lewis in April wrote, As residents pointed out from day one, the exterior was totally out of keeping with old Winchester opposite, now dwarfed and darkened by the depressing, dull and now dangerous facade. When the sun catches some of the metal, it reflects back on the houses opposite. At least temporary blindness means they can't see the monstrosity for a few minutes. Jim Mitchell of Highcliff, August the 9th, said, "Monolithic flat roof blocks dominating the varied domestic character of Jazzle Street, black window and door surrounds, prison-style railings to the balconies with rusty iron dividers, garish copper cladding and plain grey concrete paving, etc., few of which are really native to the Winchester style." Michelle Juggins of Oslebury, August the 16th, said, "Why on earth was permission given to build this eyesore? I thought we'd evolved beyond the unfortunate 1960s architecture, which has marred other parts of the city, and actually had the sense of building something, whilst not a slavish copy of Tudor or Georgian architecture, could at least be attractive. Whilst the brick externally is a good idea, the windows are uniformly of the same shape. No doubt it was built in this way, using rolled steel joists, whereby long bits of steel are stapled together to form a cube, and the building is then built around this. There is no sense of an architect designing something with a human scale. It is snapped-together building, and the skyline of it jars, as it is all flat lines which offends the shape that nature offers us. This recalls the dreadful designs of Allies and Morrison architects for Henderson, who were going to develop Silver Hill before St. Kim Gottlieb rescued Winchester. Have the city councillors learnt nothing? Have they not got eyes to see how dull Chesil Lodge is?" And that is from Rupert Pitt from Church Lane in Colden Common. Oh dear.
Yes. He obviously likes it. Lynn.
Right. "Business is failing over the euro. Sir, further to Simon Lever's letter applauding the revamped Tourist Information Centre, Chronicle, August the 30th, I would like to point out where Winchester businesses fail in serving the needs of tourists. I have yet to find a cafe or shop that accepts euros. Every day, hundreds of tourists come to Winchester on a shore excursion from cruise ships docked at Southampton. Many, perhaps most, do not bring sterling cash because it is beyond their comprehension that shops don't accept euros. Furthermore, it is not possible to change foreign cash in any Winchester bank. Some tourists have Visa or MasterCard cards, but many have EC cards, which work in their home countries but not the UK. Only Marks and Spencers accepts euros. The markup makes it worthwhile. If any cafeteria or shop is willing to accept euros or dollars, that information could be passed to tourist guides by informing the TIC. And that is from Elizabeth Newport, White Chute Lane, St Cross."
Thank you, Lynn. Nick.
Really?
This one is from C. Waite, the High Street, Broughton, near Stockbridge. 19 years service. "Sir, in reply to B. Smith's letter about Broughton last week, headlined Village Metal Box, every effort was made by Bob and Judith of Westview Stores and the Community Shop Committee to keep the shop at Westview Stores. Alas, this could not happen for various reasons. That is why the shop had to be moved to, as B. Smith puts it, a large tin can. The owners have given 19 years to Broughton residents, now wish to retire. However, they have agreed to keep the post office running until the village hall is converted to hopefully carry it on."
Thank you. Jane.
This letter is entitled Wrong Place. "Sir, although the proposed site for a new town in the Sutton-Scotney area is smaller, being south of Blackwood and east of the mainline railway, Chronicle September the 6th, the fundamental concept is flawed. Any plan to build thousands of homes near Mitcheldever as a new town, the impact on the countryside, rivers and woodland would have a devastating effect on the existing community and the surrounding pristine countryside. The number of homes is not the only issue. but the infrastructure, increased traffic, pollution, the need for shops, doctor's surgeries, schools, community centres. Further, building a new town closer to London would become a magnet for those wishing to escape the capital and enjoy the scenic beauty and much else that Winchester and region has to offer. There seems to be a worrying trend to build homes in the thousands, accompanied by new roads being cut through rural countryside without a thought to the existing residents, who typically cherish and enjoy their locality. New housing will be needed in moderation and without destroying the existing habitat. The potential solution lies in creating a positive plan that enhances an area with modest home building while maintaining the very reason for living there. One can only hope that the local residents' genuine concerns, indeed fears, will be taken seriously and the planned public meeting attended by the key players in the process. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Thank you, Jane. Lynn.
And now we have a musical failure. Sir, I love music, but only played in the right place, certainly not between each spoken sentence in a documentary. This is irritating and unnecessary. I live in hope that one day programme planners will take notice of our complaints, for I know that I am not the only one to voice them. I dislike the high-pitched screech of a soprano or the deep-down groans of the bass and baritones when the men seem to be suffering in agony. I like the organ, the violin and the sound of a well-trained choir while a military band can set the feet tapping. I cannot sing a note myself, and a while ago when attending church with my late husband, I mentioned this failure in my life as we were chatting to our rector after the Sunday morning service. He suggested that I should make an effort, for he was certain the good Lord would forgive a few flat notes, and I'm sure he was right. However, I carried the words and music in my head, but there was another little space in there for a mean mental image of a whole congregation fleeing the church if I opened my mouth. I then told the rector that if it was all right with him, I would continue to mime, and my husband, who had a pleasing tenor voice, would provide the sound and sing aloud enough for us both. I admired his talent and still carry the words and tunes in my head with happy memories. And that is from Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton.
Love that image, yes, thank you. Nick.
Right, this one's entitled Bushfield Plan. Sir, three cheers for Barbara Guthrie, letters August the 9th, and her call for a bigger, better vision for the future of Bushfield Camp as part of a vital lung for Winchester and a green barrier to the south of the city. Long before it was a barracks, this camp was part of the ancient downlands that once cradled our city. The spectacular views of St Catherine's Hill, St Cross and Winchester Cathedral from this last remaining wedge of wild downland make it especially precious. Winchester currently has a huge amount of building work going on. Not just the major housing developments gobbling up farmland at Pitt and Barton Farm, but the sort of piecemeal infill taking place on Chilbolton Avenue. Bit by bit, we are losing the encircling green spaces and big gardens that once made this such a pleasant town. Surely it's time for the City Council, employed by citizens to champion public welfare, to do something practical to counterbalance all this intensive development. So here's a vision they could sign up to. Instead of yet another profit-driven commercial development for no clear purpose, why can't the council designate the 20 hectares of Bushfield Camp as a public asset in their new local plan? Surely it forms a natural part of the country park already proposed for the area. This new Winchester Country Park would then take in Bushfield Camp, Bushfield Down and Whiteshute Ridge, creating a substantial area of species-rich downland on the edge of the city. The terms of reference of the consultation launched by Bushfield's landowners, church commissioners, are far too narrow. Local people need to challenge the process and asked them to name their price for Bushfield Camp. With the council's backing, we can then mount a public campaign to raise the money needed to turn this long derelict area into a thriving community asset, promoting health and well-being for all. And that's from Beau Priestley, Fairfield Road, Winchester.
What a lovely idea. What a lovely idea.
Thank you, Nick. I wish we could have shared with you the facial expressions of Councillor Jane Rutter during the course of that letter.
I just wish we had the money to do it. I really do. It's a wonderful idea.
OK, Jane, please.
This letter is about swim history. Sir, Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club will be continuing their celebrations to mark the club's 70th year with a display of the history of swimming in Winchester and history of the club. This will be part of the Heritage Open Day programme on September the 15th between 10 and 4 and will be held at the Winchester Lido, Hyde Church Lane, SO23 7DZ, which sadly no longer has a pool but is an active community sports club venue. We've been finalising our display and would love to hear from anyone with any information or knowledge of swimming over the years which would be of interest to others. If, for example, you used to swim with the club or know of someone who swam with WCPSC in the past, perhaps at the Lido or earlier in the river, please get in touch by emailing events at wcpsc.org.uk. Even if you don't have information to share, we would love to see you on the day. You may even have a bit of birthday cake for you. And that's from Mike Fisher, Chief Executive, Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club, St Catherine's Road, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Thank you, Jane. Lynn.
And now we have a Letters to the Editor extra called A Fine Servant. Sir, with the death of local resident Lord Vincent, the nation has lost one of its most distinguished public servants. Richard Vincent joined the army as a national serviceman and became so captivated by soldiering that he signed on. As a young officer, he served in Malaya during the emergency, in Germany at the height of the Cold War, and in Northern Ireland during the worst of the Troubles. His cool judgment in a crisis led to his appointment as Chief of the Defence Staff in 1991. He was the most scientifically qualified person ever to have held that post and was widely recognised as one of the boldest modernisers. He first met Mikhail Gorbachev when he came to Britain to meet Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and later had to grapple with the consequence of the collapse of the Warsaw Pact and the intricacies of the arms control negotiations which followed it. From 1993 to 96, he was chairman of NATO's military committee in Brussels as Yugoslavia broke up and descended into vicious ethnic wars, and NATO created the IFOR operation in Bosnia, which eventually ended the most savage European conflict since the Second World War. I persuaded him to discuss these experiences at Winchester's Best of British Festival in 2012, and can still see the awestruck looks on the faces of the young informed cadets who had the good sense to come and hear him. He was a great man who served his country with distinction. And this is from John Miller, Bishop Sutton, Alsford.
Thank you, Lynn. That's the end of our letters for this week. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we have the Hampshire Chronicle's editorial comment. This week is about dental care for children. Nick, please.
Yes. Time for campaign over dental care. Nearly 40% of children in Hampshire and 47% in Southampton have not seen a dentist in the last year. Across the county, more than 100,000 kids have not sat in a dentist chair in the last 12 months. Figures from the NHS show that just 61% of children in Hampshire saw an NHS dentist in the 12 months prior to June 2018. In Southampton, it was 47%. This should be a major cause of alarm for everyone. What makes the figures even more surprising is that NHS dental care for children is free. The Chronicle reports health bosses and civic chiefs saying the figures are concerning but not surprising due to the number of children living in poverty. We cannot allow the authorities to shrug this off as somehow acceptable. For generations, dental health had been improving, one of the best examples of the importance of the NHS. Now it appears things are going into reverse. Dental health may not seem as important as the battle against cancer or obesity, but poor dental health in childhood can cause a lifetime of discomfort and unhappiness. Good dental care can pick up other serious health conditions such as mouth cancer, admittedly very rare in the young. A major campaign to get children back to the dentist is needed.
Thank you, Nick. Well, we now have a question and answer session on My Winchester. Madeline Smith, age 59, of the Winchester Poetry Festival, she lives at Nuns Road, Hyde, tells us about her favourite Winchester things. Now, I'll ask the questions and Jane will read Madeline's answers. So, what is your favourite restaurant or cafe?
The Cabinet Rooms for Style, and I love Flat White's Outdoor Pod.
And your favourite pub or bar?
The Hyde Tavern. Jan, the landlady, has turned it into a brilliant community pub.
And your favourite shop?
P&G Wells, the city's independent bookshop. I hardly ever come away without buying a book, even if I just go in to give them a pile of Poetry Festival leaflets.
And what's your favourite building?
I have a great fondness for the Theatre Royal Winchester. I was pleased to see it getting a fresh coat of paint this summer.
And what's your favourite view?
To and from the Hockley Viaduct. I regularly cycle across the viaduct and then look back on it. You can see the water meadows, St Catherine's Hill, Twyford Down, just perfect.
And who or what do you think is Winchester's biggest icon?
St Swithin needs mentioning. It was gloriously sunny on St Swithin's Day, the 15th of July this year, and so it has continued.
And Winchester's best kept secret?
Although practically in the city centre, Whinnell-Moor's Nature Reserve is always a peaceful haven to walk around.
And what do you think is the best thing about Winchester?
Probably I'd say this anyway, but the thriving festival scene. Not just the arts festivals, but also food and drinks, such as the forthcoming coffee festival.
And the worst?
Cycle access. The city is very difficult to get around.
And if there's one thing you could change about the city, what would it be?
I'd encourage some joined-up thinking and action to enable safe pedestrian and cyclist access to the entire city.
And now, could you describe Winchester in just one sentence?
It's a great place to live, work and be entertained.
Thank you. And that was the views of Madeline Smith, who's the manager of the Winchester Poetry Festival and lives in Nuns Road, Hyde. Well, now we go on to Joanna Lewis's column, which Lynn will read for us, please.
The Kindness of Pastors. I love you. No, I really love you. You are the best. I heard that a lot last Saturday night. Sadly, not directed at me, but towards the Winchester Street pastors out on patrol in Winchester City Centre, whenever they were spotted by young revellers they had helped in the past. I had the privilege of joining the street pastors as an observer for a night shift which began around 9:30 p.m. Drawn from all walks of life with a deep Christian faith, the trained volunteers by rota look after and offer assistance to anyone in need, from drunk teenagers to elderly addicts. They won't leave until the last nightclub has closed or the last vulnerable person is safe. I got home at 4 a.m. Hampshire is blessed with many volunteers, like the Lion of the British Legion, Poppy Abeel, Norman Brown, who died recently, aged 91, Street pastors also regularly give their time for free, and quickly I came to understand why young people so respect them. Carrying rucksacks, they quietly and without fuss provide a range of support. It could be hot soup or a bar of chocolate. They carry a dustpan and brush to sweep up broken glass. They negotiate taxis to take the worst for wear home or liaise with the emergency services. Or they simply listen if someone needs to pour out their story sitting on a curb shoeless. They also give out flip-flops. They're like everyone's favourite aunt and uncle for the night. What a task many of our night workers have. Take the doorman. They get threatened, photos put on social media, head-butted and verbally abused. We spoke to one who was a young dad, already getting little sleep with a newborn at home. After clocking off at 1 a.m, he would start his next shift doing hospital security at 7 a.m. Everyone will certainly have their work cut out in the next few weeks as students return. But as annoying as the drunken hordes of vomit-projecting, shouting freshers are, each one is someone's son or daughter whose parents are probably praying their darlings are not doing what they once did themselves. I confess I had a few uncomfortable flashbacks to my first Friday night out as a student. I managed to get an orange traffic cone onto the bus and woke up in bed with it the next morning. I didn't think being a street pastor would be so challenging. I thought the hardest thing would be not to eat my prepared snacks before the shift. A challenge failed, handing over as my contribution to some of the most selfless, kindest people on the planet, a crumpled, half-eaten packet of Kit Kats. You do need stamina. The next day I staggered around with legs so stiff from wandering around in the cold, I walked like the Guinness Book of Record holders for the person with the most painful piles. Seriously, some of the homeless young adults break your heart. Dispensing a hot drink brings you closer to groups you normally see from a distance. Chatting to a young man, intelligent, sensitive, but who had lost his way, and seeing his sense of hopelessness left me in tears. But it's certainly something I would do again and would encourage others to. Ultimately, it's an uplifting experience because of the way so many people get looked after by their friends or through the kindness of strangers. There was a lot of love on those streets. That was symbolised by a man out celebrating the birth of a child with his best mate. They'd been drinking since 4 p.m. As one argued religion, the other lifted up his shirt. On his chest, he had one tattoo of his mother and another of his father. That summed it. The pull to get totally bladdered will always be a human characteristic, but stronger is the bond of love.
Thank you, Lynn. Now we're going to have the Hampshire Chronicles section called Your Say. Now, Public Health Minister and Winchester MP Steve Bryan has said that he's looking to ban under-16s from buying energy drinks. So the Hampshire Chronicle have asked four people their views. And the first was Stephen Powell, 56, an IT designer of St Cross Road, Winchester. And he said,
I've got kids and I wouldn't want them drinking them. I think they probably should be banned. The healthier, the better.
Sophia Sketchko, 36, a librarian from Fordington Avenue, Fulfield, Winchester, said,
I haven't heard much about it, but I think it's a good idea to ban them. It's just going to be difficult to implement the ban.
And Anthony Hill, age 43, an advertising agent from King Alfred's Terrace Hyde, said,
I guess in moderation they're okay. Some kids get addicted, and that's awful. God knows how, but maybe they can moderate the amount kids drink.
And Julie White, 55, self-employed bookseller from Chalmersford, said, I agree with it all. I have four sons and I think they probably drink what I consider too many. They're marketed as fun, which can be dangerous. Now we go on to look at an alternative view of the news from Belgarum. Nick, what's it about this week, please?
Well, the title is The Heron in the City, and that's heron, not heroin. There's a substream of the River Itchen that runs by Winchester School of Art and the site of the former police station on North Walls. Belgarum was just thinking the other day that it had been a while since he had spotted any fish in the water that has its share of tins, cans and stuff. Then, last Thursday, he spotted this heron, only feet from the vehicles parked in Derngate car park. The photo, which accompanies this article, was taken on a mobile. The heron is towards the back of the picture in the shade. The bird, who appeared to be quite young, stood absolutely still, not poised to spear a fish, but with head raised, acutely conscious of the human being only a few yards away. The Mexican standoff lasted a few minutes before the human being beat a retreat. But at least it shows that although Belgarum may not have spotted any fish in the stream for a while, a heron must know better.
Maybe that's why there are no fish left.
Yes.
It's a lovely green picture as well showing the stream.
It is indeed.
The side with a heron in the background.
Yes, thank you, Nick. Before we go on to historical items, starting with Lynn, please, at 25 years ago.
25 years ago, Friday, September the 10th, 1993. The residence permit parking scheme in the Fairfield Road area of Winchester is to remain unchanged, despite overcrowding problems. In the 24-hour restricted zone, there are not enough parking spaces for the number of permits issued, members of Winchester City Council's Traffic and Engineering Committee heard on Monday. Over 60 residents in the Fairfield Road, Cranworth Road and Stockbridge Road areas attended a public meeting with council representatives to discuss the success of the scheme. The general feeling was that there should be no limitation on the number of permits issued and that they were willing to accept parking on a first-come, first-served basis. Members were told there was considerable discussion about road safety issues in connection with Never the Cliff School, Hatherley Road. Although there have been no accidents over the last 5 years, residents were concerned about the behaviour of drivers. There was a call for businesses to have parking permits for staff during the day, but this was felt to counteract the aims of the scheme, which were to displace commuter parking into pay and display car parks and to improve the environment for residents. Residents in Stockbridge Road wanted more choice as to which side of the road they could park. And also, same date, plans for a retail park plans for a retail park comprising of 60,000 square feet food retail store, 3 30,000 square feet non-food retail stores, 1 10,000 square feet non-retail store and a petrol filling station, restaurant and 1,000 car parking spaces have been submitted to Winchester City Council. The site, situated on land fronting the Romsey Road near the Badger Farm roundabout, extends to 25 acres. Expressions of interest in the site have been received from a number of national retail warehouse operators, says a statement issued yesterday. Discussions are also said to be taking place with a number of food retailers not represented in the city. The developers consider that the site is well located in relation to the road network and the build-up areas of Winchester. It is felt that this scale of development is required to ensure that Winchester can compete with surrounding centres with more recent out-of-town shopping facilities.
Thank you.
Nick?
Two articles from 50 years ago, Saturday, September the 14th, 1968. John Lane Construction Limited is starting work on a £200,000 contract for a £500,000 extension to the existing premises of Harp Lager Brewery Southern Limited at Alton. Work is scheduled for completion by September 1969. The contract is for a four-storey building housing fermentation and storage tanks, The building would be of steel frame construction with temporary cladding on two of the elevations for future development and precast exposed aggregate panels on one elevation. Foundations will be piled. The architect for the project is Sydney Greenwood, FRIBA, and the quantity surveyors are Andrew Roberts and Partners. Laing was the main contractor for the existing brewery, which was completed at a cost of £2.5 million in 1963. And the second article from 50 years ago. Although held comparatively late in the season, Alsford's annual agricultural show has always maintained immense local popularity. In a way, the 1968 event at Tichborne Park on Saturday was no exception. And yet it was, because local loyalties this year were almost matched by support from further afield. Visitors from throughout the south of England were among the exhibitors, and the record 3,400 who paid at the turnstiles. Perhaps it was befitting that this year, on the occasion of the Alsford and District Agricultural Society's Diamond Jubilee, the event should begin its climb through the ranks of Hampshire's smaller shows. Attendance figures were 700 up on last year's, and receipts amounted to an extra £250. The reason? No doubt the favourable weather had something to do with it, together with the fact that Alsford's annual event is renowned for its standard of organisation. A show presents inevitable problems for its officials even after 60 years, commented Mr. E. L. Howell, secretary for the past 2 years. It's been hard work. I feel it has been worth it.
Jane?
This is from 100 years ago, in September 1918. The services at St. Bartholomew's Hyde on Sunday morning and evening, but particularly in the evening, were in the nature of memorial services for Private Sidney Hubert Sevier, formerly headmaster of Hyde School, who was killed in action, as reported in our edition of last week. The church was unusually full. Private Wilfred Barrington, Devonshire Regiment, killed in action, was the elder son of Mr. and Mrs. Barrington of Hillcote Cottage, Sleepers Hill, Winchester. The deceased, who was 18 years of age in December last, joined up on the last day of the year, 1917, and was sent to France on June the 1st. As a boy, he was in the choir of St. Cross Church for 3 years, and immediately prior to joining up, was employed at the Hursley Kennels at Pitt.
200 years ago was Monday, September the 14th, 1818. Samuel Hedditch, convicted at our last assizes of cattle stealing, John Stanley and George Carter of horse stealing, William Benham and Harry Sherwood of sheep stealing, and for which the sentence of death was passed, but reprieved, for each to be transported to New South Wales for life. Joyous. There we go. Have a look at what's on in our area over the course of the next sort of week or so. On Saturday, September the 29th, there's the Michaelmas Fair at the Hospital of St. Cross in Winchester from 10 to 4.30. Tickets are £3 for adults, children under 16 free. There are over 20 craft stalls from around Hampshire, and this year there will be an added attraction of Falkenhayn birds of prey on display and in flight, and the madding crowd to sing and entertain visitors. On Friday, September the 14th, Winchester Art Club annual public lecture by art historian Douglas Skeggs. Krakow, the City of the Dragon, 7.30, the Discovery Centre, Jury Street, Winchester. Tickets from the Discovery Centre, of course, or on the door. Winchester Cathedral lunchtime recitals on Tuesday, September the 18th at 1 p.m. Yumi Fujizi. Sorry about that. Fujizi, I think that's pronounced, violin. The hour-long concerts have been running for over 20 years, bringing to Cathedral hundreds of talented musicians, demonstrating skills on almost every instrument possible. All are welcome. The recitals are free. Retiring collection. And finally, Sunday, September the 30th, Songs of Angels. The Thomas Wilkes Singers, conductor Christopher Tolley, with Nigel Gardner, chamber organ, and Lionel Handy, solo cello, will be giving a recital in aid of the Blue Apple Theatre at the Church of St Cross, Winchester, 7:30. The programme includes music by Victoria Bach, Greshaninoff and Vaughan Williams. Tickets £13 from the Cathedral box office. Yes, and Jane Rutter is to introduce an additional item of what's on, please.
Thank you, yes. Next Saturday, the 22nd of September, in my local church, St Mary's in Kingsworthy, we have an excellent concert at 7:30 with the Reading Phoenix Choir. They're just starting their 50th anniversary celebration year. They sing without sheet music, so their focus is completely on the conductor and mostly unaccompanied as well. My daughter Katie sings with them now, which is how that we have the link with the... And there's a bar, and the church will be open and the bar from 7 p.m. And tickets are just £10 per person, available on the door. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. And now, before we go on to sort of general items of news, I know that many of you are waiting eagerly for the lighting up times for this week. The sun will rise at about 6:45 a.m. and it will set at about 7:15 p.m. Right, and now we'd go on to the regular items of news, starting with Lynn, please.
Hundreds enjoy Naomi House Day. More than 500 people have helped a Hampshire charity celebrate its 21st birthday. The Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospice charity, based at Sutton Scotney, welcomed crowds on Saturday for the fete, which also marked its first open day in 3 years. The hospices, which offer care and support to life-limited and life-threatened children, young adults from across the South, offered people the rare opportunity to look around the state-of-the-art facilities whilst also putting on a fun-filled family day. Among the activities at the open day was a petting farm, bungee, trampoline and an assortment of food stalls. However, the show was stolen by the live entertainment throughout the day, including Rubik's Cube, a rock choir from Osborne School, a special school for pupils with learning difficulties. Mark Smith, chief executive of Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "I am delighted that so many people came to support us and look around our fantastic facilities. We are totally dependent on the generosity of individuals, businesses and community groups, so it is essential that we are visible to all our supporters in the community and that people have the opportunity to see our hospices for themselves, to meet our staff and learn about the vital care and support we offer children and young adults across the region. It was a great pleasure for everyone at Naomi House to welcome so many supporters to our hospices and show them just what their fabulous efforts have helped create and maintain over 21 years of care. Since the hospice first opened its doors in 1997, they have cared for 1,144 families across the South. The charity is currently caring for 325 children and young adults with life-limiting and life-threatening illnesses."
Winter prep for county's roads. Hundreds of miles of Hampshire's roads have been prepped for winter, with potholes filled in time for the colder weather. The County Council's roads team took advantage of the warmer summer months to treat road defects. The authority has used an array of treatment techniques, including surface dressing and micro-asphalt, which the council says represents excellent value for money by keeping our roads in good condition and preventing potholes. The council says that these treatments are widely used and recognised as the most cost-effective method of keeping the roads in the best possible condition for as long as possible, by slowing the formation of potholes and other defects such as cracks. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport, said, Hampshire Highways teams have made the most of the hot, dry summer to complete over 300 surface dressing schemes. A large number of completed schemes represents over 1 million square metres of maintenance. That's the equivalent size of 142 football pitches. He added, surface dressing is a preventative measure. It successfully extends the life of the roads, allowing us to make the most of our resources and keep all those who live and work here moving on Hampshire's road network. Potholes are formed by water seeping into the road surface, freezing and expanding. They are a frequent annoyance to motorists, causing damage to vehicles. One way the authority has looked to target them is with a dragon patcher. The flamethrower wielding machines can repair up to 150 holes per day. And this article is accompanied by one of these dragon patcher flamethrower machines.
Thank you, Jane.
This article is entitled Why Home Contest is Just the Ticket for £25. And it's about a new forest home which is being offered as a prize in a competition with tickets costing £25. It's a question lots of people have wondered. Who are the couple behind the Win a Mega Home competition, and why have they decided to sell their New Forest home via an online contest rather than through an estate agent? The answer, says Mark Beresford, is very simple. Like a lot of other couples in our age group, we know we'll soon be rattling around in our home as two of our children are preparing to work in London. And while there are a thousand reminders of the happy family life they've enjoyed over the last 12 years, from their children's lively bedrooms to the kayaks they've used on the River Avon to the cinema room where they'd enjoy film nights once a week, they both felt it was a good time to make a change. The decision to sell also coincided with the news that they had been allowed planning permission on a plot of land they've owned for many years near Sharon's elderly parents' home in West Sussex. My brother and sister live near there and we do have some very good friends of ours, says Sharon. It will be nearer to London for Mark's work, turning round struggling companies and cut down travel times for the whole family. But there's another reason too. Because of the eye-watering rates of stamp duty now applicable on homes like their German-designed Huff House with its heart-stopping views of the river valley below, the offers they received when they tried to sell conventionally just didn't stack up. They knew that houses could be sold via competition. It's not a raffle because you have to answer a question as well as pay for the ticket, says Mark, and decided to give it a whirl, a very big whirl as it turned out. We engaged two sets of lawyers, one to oversee the general terms and conditions of the competition and to ensure it complies with consumer and trading laws, says Mark. Then we had to get a specialist London lawyer, they have engaged a household name firm, to ensure we complied with Gambling Commission rules. The first question in their competition was regarded as too easy. We had to think of another, says Mark. But the lawyer's agreement was crucial, because you can't run a contest like this without a payment provider. And the payment provider won't touch you until it's all agreed that you comply, he says. Then they engaged another firm to assist with the actual prize draw. It's totally random, like the premium bond selector, and started letting people know. They anticipated people would find it hard to get their heads round the idea of winning a home for £25. We are disruptors. This is different and very non-conventional, so we can understand that, says Mark. Although, he points out, national newspapers also run competitions to win a house. But we know of three similar competitions which have completed this year, so it's happening a bit more. Judging by the interest we've seen from people, I think it will happen a lot more. If their experience is anything to go by, it will. They've already received around 20 inquiries from people about running similar competitions to sell their properties, from as near as Sandbanks to as far as to Antigua, and have started building a platform which will allow them to do this. but who is buying the 250,000 tickets, which will be sold until December the 31st, when the competition closes. Quite a few of our friends have told us they've bought them, reveals Sharon. They also know that many people in the area immediately surrounding Avon Castle and Ringwood have snapped up the chance. People in Southampton, London and the M3 corridor seem keen too. We think people are buying them for their grandchildren as gifts, maybe even wedding or Christmas presents, said Mark. Because of the strict rules, if not enough tickets to trigger the house prize are sold, that's 170,000, then there will be a substantial cash prize. Mark hopes the competition will allow someone who wouldn't normally get the chance to enjoy a property like theirs to live in it. They won't have to worry about stamp duty because it's part of the competition prize, but they would get an opportunity afforded to very few. More than anything, both want the house to become a home for a couple or family who will enjoy it as much as they have. I believe your home is where your family is, says Sharon, and we have loved being here. And it's accompanied by two photographs, one of the view out across beautiful green fields and down to a river valley, and one of the house itself, which is a very modernistic huff house with sort of wing roofs and things. It looks very posh, I must say. But not a bad buy for £25.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trust Secures Cottage, a different sort of house. A cottage in the New Forest will be renovated and renamed in memory of a Winchester boy who lost his life in a skiing accident several years ago. The Cameron Bespolka Trust has teamed up with the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds to convert the derelict building Franchises Lodge. The RSPB acquired Franchises Lodge in March 2018. It will undergo renovation to provide research facilities and residential accommodation for small groups from schools and colleges. The building, at No Man's Land on the northern edge of the forest, will be renamed Cameron's Cottage and help visitors connect with and learn about nature. Cameron, who was a pupil at Winchester College, was a bird watcher and nature enthusiast who died aged 16 in a tragic accident in Austria in December 2013. Corinne Cruikshank, Cameron's mother, who helped set up the Cameron Bespolka Trust, said, "When Cameron was 15, he spent 3 nights in a cottage in a Florida nature reserve. His stay in that cottage helped to fire his passion for wildlife observation. We set up the trust as a charity in Cameron's memory to inspire young people to love and appreciate nature. We have been looking for somewhere where young people can experience and connect with nature as he did, and we think this is just the right place." The charity has pledged £350,000 towards creating and running the facility. The RSPB will now draw up plans for the new centre, working with universities, colleges, schools and organisations to understand their needs and talking to the local communities within the New Forest National Park. Peter Exley, Public Affairs Manager for the RSPB, said, "It is vital that we provide ways for young people these days to connect with nature if we are to save nature now and in the future. Cameron's Cottage is a wonderful opportunity to do just that. Our vision together is to create a unique, special facility immersed in this wonderful location, a place that will inspire the next generation of naturalists and conservationists. We are delighted to be working with the Cameron Bespoke Trust and grateful to them and their supporters for putting forward the funding. The plans were made possible by donations to the charity. To donate to the charity or for updates on the scheme, visit the Cameron Bespolka Trust website, www.cameronbespolka.com.
This next one's entitled Milestone Age for Manners, but probably not what you might be expecting it to be about. It's an historical cricketing story. Former Hampshire batsman John Manners is now the oldest living first-class cricketer, having reached the milestone of 103 years and 345 days on Wednesday of last week. Manners, a skilled batsman and competent seam bowler who is the only man alive to have played first-class cricket before the war, overtook Derbyshire's Jim Hutchinson, who died in 2000 at the age of 103 years and 344 days. The right-hander was an amateur after following a family tradition of education at Dartmouth and a career in the Royal Navy, but joined the Hampshire side in August 1936, approaching his 22nd birthday. In May 1935 at Portsmouth, Manners scored 20 and took 4-43 over the United Services in a victory over a strong Hampshire club and ground side. But the game that clinched John's place in the Hampshire side was captaining the Royal Navy in a two-day match via the Army at Lord's in July 1936. He scored 23 and 47 not out and took the last wicket in a drawn game. His performance was watched by Colonel Heseltine, then Hampshire's president and former player, who recommended John to his county. Manners made 81 on debut, just 19 runs away from being the only Hampshire player to score a century in their opening first-class appearance. And he continued to total 212 first-class runs in his first fortnight at the club. However, there would be no more county cricket in the next three seasons as naval duty called, after which the war intervened. He remained in the Royal Navy after the war and played regularly for their side and the combined services. That included, in May 1947, a two-day match at Portsmouth alongside his brother against the Hampshire side, much changed from that of 11 years previously. Despite the end of his county career, John would play a further 12 matches designated as first class between August 1948 and June 1953. He continued to play in non-first class matches for the Free Foresters, the 40 Club and MCC in the mid-1960s, and even in 1979 at the age of 63, and appeared for Wiltshire Queries in a series of matches against Dorset Rangers. Hampshire Cricket will look to mark the milestone in the coming weeks. Chairman Rod Bransgrove commented, "Everyone involved in Hampshire Cricket, past and present, salutes John Manners for his terrific innings and hopes that he holds the record as the longest living first-class cricketer for a very long time."
New use for dumped tents. They were dumped and left for someone else to clear up. But hundreds of tents from Boomtown Fair near Winchester have been put to a new use by a charity based more than 80 miles away. Over 1,000 tents abandoned at Boomtown, Reading and Electric Picnic Festivals have been delivered to homeless migrants in Calais, France. St Albans-based homelessness charity Emmaus Hertfordshire transported the abandoned tents across the Channel. Tents are now so cheap that many festival goers simply leave them on the site for the organisers to deal with. The charity received a donation from three Irish festival goers who collected the discarded tents. They are part of a group dedicated to supporting refugee camps across the world. Emmaus Hertfordshire Chief Executive Tony Ferrier said, "Since the camps in Calais were demolished in 2016, many of the migrants have now been displaced. They are living in the woods or anywhere that they can while trying to avoid the authorities. Although they are not illegal, they are not welcome in Calais anymore."
National Award for Children's Nurses from Winchester. 9 specialist children's nurses from Winchester were commended for their work by Prince Harry last week. The Children's Community Nurse Team, based in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, received the prestigious award for being the most inspirational health team at the National Well Childs Awards. They were chosen from hundreds of nominations and were in the company of royalty as they collected their award after being nominated by several parents of children they cared for, who said the team went above and beyond the call of duty. The community nurses look after children and support their families in their own homes, helping them to manage chronic and complex conditions. Wendy Green, clinical matron for the team, said, "I am so proud of the entire team for this award, and it really feels special to have been nominated by families we have looked after. Meeting Prince Harry and Meghan is something the team will never forget, but we were all so honoured to have been in such incredible company of other healthcare professionals, children, families and volunteers." The five nurses who attended the award ceremony in London were photographed with the Duke and the Duchess of Sussex. The Prince gave a speech at the event and said, "Every one of you is truly amazing. You have shown all of us what it means to be a champion, whether for yourself, your family, your community, or someone in need."
New chairman appointed for City Hospice Appeal. Winchester is one step closer to having another hospice as the fundraising appeal secures a chairman and board of trustees. The fundraisers are aiming to convert Burrell House on Romsey Road. Nick Vaughan, a senior partner at the Parris Smith Solicitors, is the new chairman. He said, "I am very pleased to take up this role. It is almost impossible to believe that Winchester does not have a hospice, with patients requiring this care currently needing to travel to Andover or Southampton." Elizabeth Padmore, chairman of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Nick brings with him a wealth of knowledge about the charitable sector and is well connected to the local community." The trustees, all volunteers, include Nigel Atkinson, the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Mark Byford, former Deputy Director General at BBC, Amanda Isbister, retired GP, Ian Steele, of Richard Steele and Partners, Simon Cramp, Town Planner for Hampshire County Council, John Theophilus, retired Chartered Accountant, Dr. Lara Alloway, Medical Director at Hampshire Hospitals. The appeal needs £2.5 million to convert Burrell House into a 10-bed facility. And there's a picture accompanying this article showing Nigel Atkinson, Elizabeth Padmore, Nick Vaughan and Dr. Lara Alloway at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
Hampshire County Sports Day. Last country sports day at Tichborne Park before move. There was a record attendance for the Hampshire Country Sports Day at Tichborne Park. From next year, the annual celebration of the countryside is moving to Berryley Park near East Meon. Organisers, the Countryside Alliance, estimated that total attendance was between 2,500 and 3,000 people. There were displays from falconer Jonathan Marshall, Chris Green, the countryman, and Howard Kirby, gun dogs, who all had the crowds applauding and cheering. There were more than 80 trade stands and a hound parade that featured fox, beagle, teckel, mink and even Sealham terriers, who travelled from as far as Cornwall. Other events included mink, beagle and foxhounds displays, an interhunt mounted relay and clay pigeon shooting. Visitors could learn how to fly fish, how to safely use hunting rifles and learn the ropes of archery. Many people said that this is the only show of its kind. An unexpected highlight of the day was when a member of the Hambledon Hunt proposed to his girlfriend while she was mounted on her grey horse in the main arena in front of the crowds. It's always a dodgy thing to do.
It is.
Fortunately, she said yes. Sarah Rutherford of the Countryside Alliance said, "This is a very special event and we are looking forward to the next chapter as we move to Berryley Estate in 2019. The reasons for the move were unclear. The League Against Cruel Sports had advised show organisers not to host the hunt due to biosecurity breaches. They warned of an outbreak of bovine tuberculosis in a hunting pack that killed nearly 100 hounds. However, a show spokesperson said, "There's just been one pack of hounds that's been infected with bovine TB,
There have been no further outbreaks at this hunt kennels, nor have symptoms been seen in any other packs of hounds since. And there's a photograph of a couple of dogs racing, terrier racing, but it's open to all breeds of dogs at Tichborne Park near Alsford for the last Country Sports Day.
Cancer survivor Wendy braves the shave. And there's two photographs of Wendy before and after having her head shaved. A 70-year-old Winchester resident has shaved her head in aid of cancer charity Macmillan. Wendy Hopwood, who has survived cancer twice herself, has raised over £400 from her Brave the Shave so far. Her hair was shaved off at the ID Hair Design in Winnell. She said, I decided to brave the shave to help people with cancer and their families get help and counselling at a very hard time in their lives. As a two-time cancer survivor and having lost family to cancer, I know how hard it is for the families and I wanted to help them. And I'd like to say a huge thank you to all the people who sponsored me, my family and friends who came and supported me, the lovely Kimberly who shaved my hair off, and everyone at ID Hair Design.
And this one's entitled No Barrier to Parades. Winchester Civic Chiefs say military parades on the High Street will be unaffected by the permanent anti-terrorist measures. The city, whose military links stretch back to Roman times, has long hosted parades by regiments including the Royal Hampshire Regiment and the Rifles. The City Council recently decided to make permanent the barriers installed to deter a Nice-style attack. A spokesman said, the Council is proud of its historical links with the military. The Council and relevant military organisations have discussed the potential impact that the security bollards on the High Street could have on ceremonial events. The Council can confirm that the military routes will remain the same.
And finally, Monty Talks. Monty Halls is to hold a fundraising event in Winchester for an armed forces charity. The ex-Royal Marine TV star will be giving a talk at St Peter's Church, Parish Church, in aid of the SSAFA on September the 27th. He will be presenting images and exclusive footage to the audience as he tells stories from the filming of his Channel 4 series, World War II's Great Escapes. Monty will also speak about his newest series, My Family and the Galapagos, set for broadcast later this year. All proceeds from the event will go to the SAFA Winchester Division. The charity is a small group of ex-service members who volunteer to run a series of small-scale events throughout the year. They hope that Monty's talk will not only raise funds for their causes, but will also elevate the profile of the charity in the area. Tickets cost £20 plus booking fee and include a glass of wine and canapes. To book, phone Winchester 851 315. That's Winchester 851 315.
Thank you, everyone. That concludes our excerpts from the Hampshire Chronicle for this week. Just reflecting on what we've been reading, I think my favourite bit was the letter about Cheswold Lodge, which is now dwarfed and darkened by the depressing, dull and now dangerous facade. Right, just another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 711 998. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams and to our editors, Jean Gardner, Sonia Phillips, Sheila Shepherd and Jane Picard. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
Nick Cairns.
Goodbye.
Jane Rutter.
Thank you and goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard. Goodbye.